Blog Talk Radio.
You already know.
Welcome to the war room. We got Dez, Kim, Jimmy, PJ, B. Austin, the Hot Block Commander.
How you wanna end up 1 or 2 hours show and get the brain running with the premise of talk sports on a national level? Move with the topic, sort of like the rubber. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five doing prime time. Sports conglomerates speak their minds a little bit. For sports medicine and sports veterans and greats. The 4th of 26, so the war in Kuwait. It's the war room with five knights at the round table. Five Philly guys, diversified and educated.
All right, what up? Good evening, sports fans, and welcome once again to another episode of That Show. You are once again live in the War Room, brought to you by War Room Sports. I'm Devin McMillan, and I'm sitting here at the War Room Roundtable with my man, Jimmy Williams. What up, Jimmy?
What's up, homie?
I'm chilling, man. We got B. Austin and Paul Johnson going to join us in a few minutes. Akil isn't with us tonight. He's working on that dissertation, so hang in there, brother, and get it done, Doc Ock. Tonight, we have no main topic, so we're going to discuss all the wild stories in sports this week in depth. So we definitely want to hear from you guys tonight because we need your opinions on all the wackiness. So join the chat room and call in and holler at us when we open up the Digital Extreme Tech Hotline. That number is 323-410-0012. So we're going to jump right into this Seinfeld episode, our show about nothing. First up, those birthdays.
My birthday, yay!
All right, birthdays are brought to you by Days of Beauty Hair Salon. That's 9221 Oxon Hill Road in Fort Washington, Maryland. Go see Lisa and get your wig flipped right. All right, first birthday today is one Mr. Timothy Adam Hudson.
My birthday, yay!
All right, Mr. Tim Hudson turns 36 today. Jimmy, you got anything on Tim Hudson?
Damn, he's 36 already? That's crazy.
I know, right?
I remember when he was like a rookie, he was nice, and they thought he was going to be like an all-time great. I think he may have won Rookie of the Year.
You remember the staff that they had in Oakland? It was Tim Hudson, Barry Zito, and who was the third guy? Who was the third guy?
What's his name? Hold on.
Hudson, Zito, and... it's crazy because I actually got,
you know what it was? Mark was it Mark Mulder?
Mulder. Right. Yeah, I actually went out to... I was in the Bay Area one time, went to an A's game, saw Tim Hudson pitch, and he actually pitched a complete game shutout. So, that's some good stuff to see the first time you ever go see a pitcher pitch. So that's my memory on Tim Hudson, the little complete game shutout that he pitched. I forgot who it was against, but the A's weren't really that good anyway, but they had that staff. So
they definitely did have a staff, and they were supposed to be great for a long time. But, he's 36, and he's pretty much
injuries,
not what I thought
he was going to be. For all three of them. They were supposed to be what the Phillies have now for a long time because they had those dudes while they were fairly young. So happy birthday, shout out to Tim Hudson. Our next birthday is one Mr. Lewis Markell Rowe.
My birthday, yay!
Lou Rowe turns 39 years old today.
Damn! Yo, when I think of Lou Rowe, I actually think of Lou Rowe as a high school player. Because I remember Lou Rowe... in the Concha Hocken tournament when I was a young cat, and I used to go up there to watch the players play. And
yeah,
was
before
like,
we started
dunk on
playing
somebody.
That joint
ourselves. So we started playing in that joint, we got killed. But yo, that joint, and he dunked on this ball and brought the whole backboard down. That's the first time, first and only time I seen that happen live. And I was like, this dude's going to be the greatest power ever. And he ended up being a good college player, but, It didn't translate well to the league.
You're right. He was a beast in college. But, when he got to the NBA, I guess everybody else in the NBA was a beast of his caliber or better. And, he just fell by the wayside. But Lou Rowe, he was from Jersey, right?
He was from Atlantic City, as a matter of fact. Probably the only basketball player I ever know of that had game from Atlantic City.
I know. They got basketball courts in Atlantic City? Where he come from? Come on, cuz. Anyway, happy birthday shout out to Lewis Markell Rowe. Our third birthday of the day is Eric Travez Dampier. Turns 36 today.
It's my birthday. Yay!
Actually, remember we talked about Eric Dampier a few weeks back when he was partying with the world champion Dallas Mavericks, even though he was playing with the runner-up Miami Heat. What you got on Eric Dampier?
Yo, when I think of Eric Dampier, I think of the NBA Finals, because wasn't he on both squads this year?
When did they pick him up?
I think he started at Dallas. Someone correct me in the chat room if I'm wrong, but I don't know if he started in Dallas and ended up on Miami at the end of the season, or, you know, maybe Dallas let him go last year, but he was very tight with all the Dallas players, even though he was on the Miami Heat roster at the end of the season. And he went and partied with him when they won the championship, which to me is a disgrace, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, he was thirsty. He was looking for something to do. Because, you know, during the series, he didn't get to do anything, so he was a spectator like the rest of us. He probably was sitting on the bench like we were sitting on the couch talking about how LeBron choked.
No, but, and what the hell is a Travis? I was supposed to be Travis?
I hope that's like a fancy way to spell Travis. That's the black way to spell Travis.
Travis.
All right. Our last birthday of the day is one Mr. Anthony Jerome, better known as Spud Webb.
It's my birthday. Yay!
Spud Webb turns 48 years old today. What you got on Spud Webb?
Man, what more can you say about Spud Webb other than he changed the game? He made the little man popular. I shouldn't say Spud Webb because it was Tiny R before him, but I remember watching the dunk contest, and as a matter of fact, we watched it again a couple weekends ago. It was on TV, and when Spud jumped, it looked like he was floating because he was so little, and it's like, yo, when this dude is dunking, it was hard like for the cats to compete, even though they had better dunks because he was so little. But this joker was floating in the air, like, yo, it was crazy to hop Spud where it had.
Yeah, that is why he won, because as small as he was, to get up there and do the dunks that he was doing, man, he had to have like a 50-inch vert. Spud was crazy.
It was crazy.
And his haircut was always weak.
I never really thought
Spud had like anything spectacular in the game category. But, you know, he was good enough to hold his own. You know, he played good minutes in the league. But, of course, all he's going to be remembered for is that dunk contest. So
He wasn't horrible. But at the same time, it's like, he didn't have the kind of talent that – it's funny because he's remembered, and there were a lot of better players than him that played around that era who don't get remembered. But because of what he did in the dunk contest, he actually made a name for himself.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Spud was tough. He was better than, like, Muggsy. Wasn't none of them better than Earl.
You know, but here's the thing, though. I know one thing. So Muggsy, I remember reading about Muggsy when he was in high school. Muggsy was one of the greatest high school players ever. Muggsy actually used to D-cats up as little as he was, believe it or not. But in terms of the little men, you say that Tiny is the top of the food chain, huh?
I don't consider Tiny. I mean, he is Tiny by comparison to other players in the league, but I don't think about Tiny when I think of small, because he was still like 6 feet.
All right. So where do you put Bubba Chuck? Where do you put Bubba Chuck at?
I don't consider, but like, it. First of all, Bubba is like, for me, is the number three or four all time ever to play basketball. So you already know I'm super biased there. But I don't consider him. I think there's a micro category like Nate Robinson.
You got Allen Iverson is in like the little man category.
Little guards,
but these guys are like the midget, like they shouldn't even.
These dudes are kids. Like if you see Earl, you like, yo, I will punish Earl in the post because he's smaller than me, and like I'm 6 feet, a little over six. But like AI still looks like a regular.
At least Allen Iverson was like the average height of a human being.
Of a human being. These guys are not the average height of human men.
All right. I feel what you're saying. All right, but Jimmy, let everybody know what happened this week while they were on the grind.
That's Absolutely, absolutely. On the Grind is brought to you by Philly Auto Design. Go visit the website, phillyautodesign.com, or check War Room Sports for some more information, warroomsports.com. Anyway, first story I want to talk about is Francisco Rodriguez, a.k.a. K-Rod. He was traded to the Brewers 30 minutes after the All-Star game. So my question to you, gentlemen, are the Brewers now contenders with this acquisition? Dev.
K-Rod is a pretty good closer. In Milwaukee, I'm not exactly sure if he's going to have that closer role, but he will be, you know, middle to late relief if he doesn't get the closer role. And I do think that they strengthen – I think that this move strengthens the Brewers pretty well because they're already tied for the Central Division lead with St. Louis. Contenders, I mean, I guess you can say yes, because at this point, anybody who's leading their division should be considered a contender. So, and if it strengthens them, which I think it will do, I guess it pretty much makes them a contender. So I'm going to go ahead and say yeah about that.
Yeah, so, okay. I mean, that makes sense. Also, do you have any opinion at all?
Absolutely. There was a group in the 50s. There was a group in the 50s that they were singers, and they were called the Pretenders. And you can put that team in that group, or you can put K-Rod in that group. It doesn't matter because they're not for real. He makes them better, but they're not. Yeah, they're Pretenders.
All right. When we see the Brewers in the World Series eating off that home field advantage they just earned, that Prince earned.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, for me, like, I was looking at this, and I'm like, what's crazy is they're, like, general manager, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's, like, making moves. Like, when you look at the Brewers' rosters, you're like, yo, how do you get these cats to play in Milwaukee?
Yeah.
Like,
he's on,
you know what I'm saying? Like, yo,
he's right now because Prince is a free agent at the end of the season, so they have an attitude like it's now or nothing, so we're going to do what we got to do. But my bad. Go ahead and finish what you're saying.
But what I was saying is, like, I think the dude's name is, like, Doug Melvin, I think it is. But when you look at his track record, he puts together teams wherever he goes. And it actually made me start thinking. I start, you know, looking at my Phillies and what have you. And I come to the conclusion that I think a GM in baseball is probably more important than, like, you know, other sports. And maybe we can debate this later, and I can put some more research behind it. But when you look at baseball teams, it's like, yo, GMs who have a track record win everywhere. And this guy has a track record of putting together teams. So, you know, that's what it made me think of when I see this. And I think they will be a contender. Like, you know, they have the roster to do so, so we shall see what happens. At any rate, another story I want to get into real quick. See if you guys have any opinion on this. The U.S. women shocked Brazil, then beat France, and now will play Japan for the World Cup. I know a lot of dudes were on Twitter complaining because they like to watch Brazil play, but the U.S. shocked them. So what's your guys' opinion on this? Austin, I'm going to start with you since you're the you know, in-house soccer guy.
I'm an in-house sporting man, brother. But I got the U.S. Women getting the cup, and I'm gonna tell you why. By beating Brazil, they won it. No disrespect to Japan, but they are no Brazil. Now the problem with the Brazilian team is they don't as much talent and as much history as behind Brazil. It's funny because they don't put the money into their national program. So those ladies don't play together in the off season. It's like they use the actual games as tune-ups. So it's my belief that they really didn't have a chance to really get it together, or that it would have been a more competitive situation. They may have beaten the U.S., but not having that camaraderie, not having that teamwork down, the U.S. shocked them, and Japan is about to exit with no cup.
Well, you said you said Brazil doesn't put the money into their national team. I mean, it's Brazil. How much money do you think they have? But but that's besides the point.
Good point.
City of God.
Yeah, France had a good team to look at as well. But I'm gonna go back, you know, to basically the hero of this whole thing and somebody that we gave a birthday shout out to about 2 weeks ago, and that's Abby Wambach. On both of the last two games, you know, she sealed the game
with header goals. You know, Emmy Weinbach, her head game is like that. You know what I mean? But
I totally agree.
She sealed both of the last two games, you know, with a goal. And she's that kind of like, she seems like, you know how we always talk about, you know, basketball players who got the dog in them, you know, they don't just rest on their talent or whatever. She seems like that type of person because she gets everybody around her riled up. And she has their confidence on high right now. And so, you know, I agree with you. I think they will win the cup. So that game is Sunday at 2 o'clock. I think it's 2 o'clock. Everybody look out for that. See if U.S. get to celebrate a little something in the World Cup. That's all I got.
Well, Weinbach definitely has more cojones and better head game than Paul's Landon Donovan. Because the U.S. men's team choked big time.
Yeah. But are they ever as good as people act like they are going into the tournament? Maybe they're not choking. Maybe they're just not.
They're as talented. That's a great point, Dev. They're as talented, if not more so, than people think. But they're never as good. There's a difference.
Right.
Okay. All right, so the next story I want to bring to you guys, because I really have no opinion on that, soccer, is Serena Williams showed up to ESPY.
Tatonk it.
You said Serena's ESPY?
Yeah, that's all. That's a quick story. Let's go to the next story. I just wanted to bring it up real quick. Anyway,
well, if you guys are members of our Facebook page, War Room Sports, search that. If you're not, you'll see, if you didn't catch the ESPYs, you'll see what Serena looked like at the ESPYs last night. So go on to our Facebook page.
That was a quick
page story.
Yeah.
Wait, now, before y'all move on, I would like to thank her parents, and I would like to thank her. All right, now we can move on.
All right, cool, no doubt. All right, the next thing I want to ask you guys' opinion about is this. The Associated Press is reporting that Billy Hunter sent the players a letter Tuesday night saying that the union supports players going overseas and to go make what they can, and they'll give them a call when it's time to come back. So the actual union wants for us to go do this. So we should got an opinion of this.
You know
Austin,
what that
I'll ask
is.
You first.
You
let's
know
see what
that
Austin
is.
Has. Let's see Austin. I know it. Let's see what Austin. What's your opinion on this, Austin?
My opinion. Wait. Repeat the question for the good brother, man.
Well, here's what it is. The actual NBA's players is of the union. The union is telling players, not telling them so much, but saying they support players going to play overseas while there is a lockout. So they won't get any kind of backlash from the union, and they actually support it. And he told them to go make what they can make, and they will get a call when it's time to come home and play basketball.
They're setting us up. Well, first of all, they're setting us up for a long lockout because they must know that it's going to, you know, they're digging in the trenches on both sides.
I agree with that.
I don't know. I don't know how I feel yet. Come back to me on that.
I think it's a power move. You know, they're basically trying to use that as leverage to get the owners to, you know, to move faster and kind of play ball with what they want to do. If they're telling their players that it's okay to go overseas, and this is how the owners hear it. They're telling them it's okay to go overseas and risk serious injury, you know, during the lockout. So that's a risk that the owners are looking at, and the players' union is telling them that it's okay to go ahead and do that, then all this is just a play for leverage. That's all it is. They want to get more leverage.
I don't know how it works. I don't know how it works. Maybe you guys can bring some more insight into this, but I was reading how, like, the Lloyd's of London will insure the players, like, you know, forbid anything happens to them. But it only protects the players, not the actual teams. So if Deron Williams breaks his leg, he has insurance or some kind of insurance that will pay him in the event that he gets hurt.
I think everybody who's going over there, you know, will get a Lloyd's of London policy so they can protect themselves. You know, if they do get hurt, just like a career, you know, jeopardizing a career ending injury,
right?
You know, they're going to get something. They're not going to get
The teams can't insure the players. The teams can only insure the contracts. And since we're in a lockout, the contracts are null and void.
And so they really don't have an asset that they can insure. And Lloyd's of London specializes in writing tailored specialty policies for situations like this. If you remember, they're the ones that insure Troy Polamalu's hair.
They're like the clown insurance company, but it works. You know, they insure body parts, hair, all kinds of stuff.
All right, since time is running slow, let me get a couple more things in real quick. Shaq was hired by TNT to, you know, work in studio with Kenny and Charles and all of them. And I saw it was like a little uproar on Twitter for a little bit. People were complaining because the rumor was he was going to take Weber's spot. I don't know how true that is. But also the deal that he got with TNT includes a development deal with Turner Entertainment and animation. So maybe Shaq's making cartoons and other TV shows, and that's part of the deal. Who knows? Quick answer, do you think Shaq will be good in this capacity, yes or no?
I think he will be good. I was talking to somebody today, and I like a point they made. They said as long as Shaq, you know, decides to fall in line and remember that this is an established show and he's not the superstar, then it should be pretty good. I thought C. Webb was actually pretty good at this. So
yeah, I did too.
I think
and
kinda,
that's what a lot of people were saying. A lot of
yeah, I think they
kind of
sold him
you know.
Short to go with the bigger name. They probably sold him short to go with the bigger name, thinking it might be better for ratings. But being as though, you know, two-thirds of
you know what? I see,
three
I see
originals
that
on there can't really speak the King's English too well, I think C-Webb was a pretty good compliment.
I see this a lot in football where there's a bigger name guy instead of the guy that's actually good at what they do. But the thing
right.
is, they haven't came out and said that he's taking C-Webb's spot. That was just like a rumor, and like you know, once people get a hold of a rumor on Twitter, it's like it's curtains.
Usually when Dev goes first and answers these questions, he touches all of my points. So now I really don't have nothing to say
because
you made all my points for me. C-Webb, yeah. You know, in this case, there's no chance of him choking on TV, so he does a great job. He's articulate, where Kenny tries to be articulate, but he fails, and Chuck doesn't even care. So I think that you're going to get more of the same with Shaq. Shaq's not going to bring the same intelligent perspective and articulate it in the same manner. I don't know. I think it's, you know, I hope that he's an overachiever in this endeavor as opposed to basketball where he was an underachiever. I don't want to see Shaq put up the equivalent of 12-9.
Yeah, but I mean, he could be a great Shaq, you know, that won 4 championships, but that's another story. I had one more story, and I know that the audience would enjoy it, but what I want to do is I want to wait for Brother PJ to join us, and I'll bring it up later on, so y'all got to keep listening. So with that being said, it's time to pass the rock.
Let's pass that rock. All right, family members out there. If this is your first time listening to the show, Pass the Rock is a segment we do where all 5 of your hosts, it's only 3 of us on right now, PJ will be here in a minute, we actually pass the ball around like a basketball team, and when we receive the rock, it's our turn to vent on any sports story that we want to vent on for the week. If we don't have any story, we can talk about our favorite headline, or we can just pass the rock to our teammate doing the responsible thing. So I'm going to start it off. We got a little 3-on-3 going here. I'm checking the ball up. So I'm going to just go ahead and inbound the ball to myself. All right, this is Devin, everybody, and I want to speak briefly on this new phenomenon, well, new in America, that we call planking. If you are not familiar with this photographic activity, either Google it or go on Twitter and follow Gilbert Arenas or Dwight Howard, and they'll catch you up in mere minutes. Personally, I think planking is one of the stupidest, most pointless fads I've ever seen. And I've seen some dumbass sheepish fads in my day. We live in a world of followers, so the next big thing is never hard to come by. I cram to understand how lying face down, flat, on dirty public surfaces became a cool thing to do. I'm not going to sit here and act like I've never gotten a chuckle out of a planking photo, but like with most fads, followers always ruin it and take things way too far by turning it into a contest of can you top this. I've seen men, women, and professional athletes alike planking on cars, highway dividers, shelves inside of supermarket freezers, supermarket counter conveyor belts, statues, hotel baggage carts, public bathroom floors, and many other places you wonder why a seemingly clean human being would want to lay their body. And then there's the notion that planking is directly related to how Africans were transported in ships during the slave trade. I've heard conflicting stories about this connection, but if true, people should really take heed to the image they're portraying when trying to have some innocent, albeit moronic fun. Let's play devil's advocate for a minute and say that the slavery connection is 100% true. As a black man, I would be a bit appalled at how some people, especially black people, would still engage in this imagery after acquiring that type of knowledge. But on a less serious note, a more realistic note, I'm still more appalled at the length some people will go in order to gain some attention. Bottom line, on a strictly personal level, this is just my opinion now, if you plank, especially in dirty, random public places, you are corny and pressed for attention. If this offends you, there's a very simple solution. Stop being corny and pressed for attention. That's all. And with that, I'm going to pass the rock to my man, B. Austin.
Yet again, one of the War Room generals has an issue with lemmings jumping off of cliffs into water when they can't swim. I'll be real brief, real brief. Michael Irvin walked into the closet a long time ago, and now, ladies and gentlemen, he's come out of the closet. And there's nothing wrong with that. He's gay. So what? I passed the rock to my man Jimmy.
Yo, are you saying that because he's a cowboy? Or are you saying that
because he's a cowpoke.
Yo, I'll tell you one thing, man. Like, I don't understand why he had to pose that way. And, you know, I think it's an honorable thing that he did in trying to speak up for his brother. But you know how it is, like, when you're younger, you say, I got to ask you a question, but it's for my friend. Anyway, what's up, War Room? This is Jimmy, a.k.a. James the Blueprint Williams. You can go Google me. And this week, I want to say a few words about Derek Sanderson Jeter. So Derek Jeter has now hit for over 3,000 hits and has added to his legacy as being an all-time great baseball player. People are now arguing about where he stands in terms of, you know, Yankee greats. Is he the greatest Yankee of all time or top five? I don't know where he stands historically as a Yankee because, honestly, I haven't put any thought into it. And unlike most people, I have the ability to form my own opinion. Over his career, Jeter has been a great player who has stayed out of trouble and has done nothing but play the game the right way, and he's also one of the most clutch athletes I have ever seen. I don't believe in praising people for doing what they should, like staying out of prison, but with athletes being arrested on what seems like a daily basis, I feel like those who stay out of trouble like Jeter deserve credit. This leads me to my problem with Derek Jeter. He's a Yankee. Yup, that's my problem. Being a Phillies fan, I cannot admire nor like a Yankee. Yet, I have been having a hard time finding anything to dislike about Derek Jeter. He recently sat out of the All-Star game, and I thought, okay, here's my reason. But then again, honestly, I had no problem with him doing this. All of the All-Star games are a joke at this point, but that's for a later discussion. It really is difficult to dislike a guy who plays the game extremely well, has as many hits with models and actresses as he does on the diamond, and has made a boatload of money, and is also philanthropic. But after a couple days of pondering about what I can say bad about Jeter, I finally found something, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Jeter, your cologne distributed through Avon stinks. That's right. It is horrible and cheap. It smells like a combination of polar bear urine and bone marrow from a dead alley cat. How can you associate yourself with a fragrance as repugnant as that? Your fragrance is called Driven, but it smells more like an old Chevy driven by four homeless men and a dead diabetic pig. So now, Mr. Jeter, I can throw you in the same boat as most Yankees I hate, like A-Rod, because you don't have enough sense to smell a fragrance before you put your name on it. So there you have it. Although it sounds like I'm dissing you, in a weird way, I'm actually giving you credit because that's the only thing I can find that makes me dislike you. But then again, you are a Yankee. So, FOH, and go play in traffic. I'm nice. With that, I dunk the rock.
And the crowd go wild.
Yo, Dev.
Yeah.
Let them people know how to get in contact with us, man.
Nah, PJ got it.
I can do that, bro. I can do that.
Oh, man, my brother is alive and well.
All good, man. At least for now I am. At least for now, bro. But, yo, y'all can get in touch with us, man, by checking out our website at warroomsports.com. While you're there, sign up for the War Report, our weekly newsletter right from my homepage. Click on the Contact Us tab to send a message to us about our company, our show, or to inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. If you'd like to send an email to one of the hosts personally, all of our individual email addresses are also on the page. And while you're still on the site, click on the memorabilia tab to buy cool War Room Sports merchandise, get your gear game up, and then click on the blog tab to read our latest sports articles in the All Fair in Sports and War blog. Then click on the respective icons to like our Facebook page and to follow us on Twitter. Subscribe to and friend our YouTube channel at warroomsportstv.com. For access to all of our media content in one place, anywhere, anytime, download the War Room Sports mobile app on your Android or Apple device. For general inquiries, email us at info@warroomsports.com. Join the JW Philly Realty chat room right now during the show at blogtalkradio.com/the War Room. To get into the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't want to create an account, you can sign in through your Facebook or Twitter accounts. And while you're at it, follow us, friend us, and favorite us to make The War Room one of your favorite Blog Talk Radio shows and to get updates and reminders about the show. Please subscribe to our iTunes podcast so you can listen to the show at any time on your own device. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room every week during the show. To call in and speak with the hosts, just dial Digital Extreme Technologies hotline at 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. Pressing 1 is just like raising your hand. And who knows, with your hand in the air, one of the War Room professors just might call on you. With that, I'm going to throw it back to Dev.
Hey, Dev. All right. Dev, real quick, before we jump into the HOF and FOH, I did have one more grind topic that I wanted to bring up, but I wanted to wait for PJ. Could you take a couple quick minutes real quick? This is a story I want all you guys' opinion on, and PJ, specifically you, because you're a boxing enthusiast. And it's actually a boxing story. People say we don't talk about boxing enough. But did you see the story where the guy's name was, like, Eris Landy Lara? He was fighting Paul Williams. And you guys out there may know Paul Williams. He's a, you know, big-time boxer. And Lara was actually a huge underdog in his fight.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the fight, many people believe that Lara won the fight. He was beating the trash out of Paul Williams. But what happened was at the end of the fight, there were three judges, Al Bennett, Hilton Whitaker, and Don Givens. Now, Al Bennett scored the fight a draw, 114-114. Hilton Whitaker scored it 115-114 for Paul Williams. And Don Givens scored it 116-114 for Paul Williams, which gave Paul Williams a unanimous decision in the win. And people were in the boxing community went crazy about this. The New Jersey State Athletic Control Board came in, reviewed the tapes, and suspended the three judges indefinitely.
Damn.
They did an investigation and said they found no corruption, but they want to make these judges undergo more training, so right now they're under suspension. Now, I know it's hard to understand the story because you didn't see the fight, but, I mean, everybody knows Harold Letterman. A lot of times, whatever Harold Letterman has on his, like, unofficial scorecard usually mirrors that of the judges or is close to it. Harold mm-hmm. Letterman had the fight 117-111, for Lara.
Right.
So my thing is, I'm going to start with you, PJ, since you are the boxing guy. Do you think that this is like a huge problem in the sport, or is there anything they can really do about this considering judging is subjective?
It's just like Roy Jones said at the end of the fight, because he was one of the commentators. He was basically like, yo, this is why a lot of people don't follow boxing. Like, this is one of the main problems with the sport. Like, it was obvious that Lara, if you watch that fight, yo, he was killing Paul Williams with left hand, like, roundhouses on top of his head, like, all night. I mean, it was not even funny that it wasn't even close. You know what I'm saying? So the fact that they gave it to Paul Williams, that was sick. And I think that's the problem with boxing, because you get these guys. Weren't all those judges from Jersey? I think they were all out of New Jersey. And I guess that's why the Jersey Commission came in and handed down that suspension on them guys. But it's crazy because I don't understand what they saw. Like, it was real. I mean, maybe because, did you see, at one point, Laura had a hickey on the side of his head that was, like, the size of a tire for, like, a Pinto. So it was huge. But, his cut crew did a real good job with getting it down. But, I mean, Paul Williams' face looked like he got caught in, like, the garbage disposal for, like, 13 seconds. And his joint was all chewed up and minced up, straight up. So I'm like, I don't think it was. Sometimes judges, which is incorrect, will blindly base it off what the fighters look like after the fight. You know what I'm saying? But and that's wrong too. But
there's so many issues with it. Like a lot of times when I watch boxing and you see where the judges are sitting, I'm like, yo, how can they see anything? They see less than I do. Like where they sit at. I mean, that's a problem personally. But the one thing I can say about this is I was impressed with how the athletic board came in and suspended him because a lot of times in the past, in my opinion, they would try to act like it didn't happen and try to just avoid it and not say anything about it. But to me, I'm hoping that they can clean up the sport and the fact that they stepped in because, you know, I do love MMA, but I love boxing as well. So for me, the fact that they stepped in, like, it impressed me. Jimmy, hearing the story, what's your opinion?
Yeah, the first thing that you said was the most important thing, but I don't think there's anything you can do about that at this point, the fact that judging in boxing is strictly subjective, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I don't know. Judging has a lot to do with why the sport is losing the popularity at the rate that it's losing it because, you know, take away the heavyweight division, you know, where it's just trash. You know, you have good boxers and good boxing matches left and, you know, middleweight and down. But if every time you watch a fight, you know, there's some kind of controversy with the judging, like people don't want to keep paying for this. People don't want to keep watching this because they just think the sport is fixed. So, you know, when everybody's saying that boxing is dying, it's not 100% the, you know, the fighter's fault and the skill level and the absence of great fighters. A lot of it has to do with the perceived corruption in the sport. And, you know, who wants to keep watching something where they think, you know, every time it goes to the judges, you're like, oh, here we go again. So, yeah.
You know, but the thing about that is that's a valid argument, but I was thinking about this as well. I'm like, MMA has judges, and, you know, there's a lot of decisions that people don't agree with, but I think that the history of boxing and the history of corruption is something that MMA doesn't have because,
exactly.
You know, with boxing, there's always that history where we know they fix fights, or like my man Panama was sticking stuff in cat's juice. I don't know if y'all saw that documentary, but anyway. You know, it's crazy because, like I said, I grew up watching boxing, a huge boxing fan, but this was crazy. This was like PJ said, this was like you watch it and you're like ready to turn it off before the decision because you're like, yo, he whooped his butt. And Paul Williams is a talented fighter. I think he was like 39-2 coming into the fight.
Now he's 40-2. One of y'all asked what the judges saw that everybody else didn't see, and I know what they saw. They saw the zeros and commas in those offshore accounts. that's what influenced their decision on the fight. I didn't see the fight. I heard about it, and you know the first thing that I thought of was perhaps Pretty Girl Swirl is afraid that Pac-Man, with all that bread, can get to the judges and influence the outcome of the Rumble, even more so than the alleged steroids. Maybe it's a matter of the judges. Maybe he's afraid
of the judges. He fears the judges, you think? He fears the judges more than Pac-Man. Pac-Man worried about cutting his next CD, man. He worried about
how the hell we get on a Pac-Man.
I knew he was going to try to find a way. I didn't know quite how he was going to do it. Anyway, that's all I want. I want to get you guys' opinion on that. So, Dev, you can take it over, man. I know you wanted to talk about some Hall of Fame issues. All
right. We got it's time for everybody's favorite segment, which is HOF or FOH. For those that don't know, that stands for Hall of Fame or beep out of here. So what we do is we pick a player from any sport, and we basically debate on whether we think right now, if the person's career ended right now, if it hasn't already ended, would they make it to the Hall of Fame, our Hall of Fame? Because I think we have some different criteria than the people who vote. So we're going to go ahead and start this off.
should be in the Hall of Fame.
Today's subject came to me because this person's career actually did just end. So, you know, he has a pending retirement. It's been reported. I don't know if it's 100% official, but today we're going to talk about one Mr. Yao Ming. So Yao Ming, Hall of Fame or FOH? B. Austin, what you got to say about the big China?
The Ming dynasty is over. This is hard for me because I do think that for about 3 to 5 years, he was the most dominant and best center in the world. But his career was only 8 seasons. And I think you need more than 8 seasons. So I'm gonna say, get the Marshall out of here, Yao, but with an asterisk because I'm not committed to that FOH. I'm not totally committed, but yeah, he gotta go. He can't get in.
PJ, what you think about Yao Ming? His chance.
Sort of kind of what B. Austin said in the sense that I just don't think he has the body of work. I mean, I think barring injury, I mean, we can all say if ifs were spliffs and we'd be high. And I mean, if he didn't get injured, if he wasn't as injury prone, I want to say, I think he would have a better case. Because, I mean, you look at some of his production.
Yeah, he didn't even
play
a full
eight.
It wasn't a full eight season.
I mean, last year, you know, like 5 games. But what I was thinking is that, like, if he did get a chance to play, like, say, 10 to 12 or you know, 13 seasons or something like that, based on his production, I would say there would be a good case for him to get in, definitely, from the way he's producing. But right now, I would say no. I mean, his career numbers aren't that bad. And he was, I don't know, man. I would say no. All right, I'm going to give him an FOH right now. But like Brad, I'm on the fence a little bit.
All right, before we go to Jimmy, since y'all did mention his career numbers, Yao Ming's career numbers are 19 points, 9.2 rebounds, 1.6 assists, 1.9
blocks.
He shot 52% from the field, and he was an 83% foul shooter. So, Jimmy, Yao Ming, what do you got?
I shoot 83% from the line, and he's 7
hell foot 30. Hell no, and I'm not on the fence, and I'm not being as generous as these guys. He doesn't even belong around my Hall of Fame, not in the same city. I mean, people talk about how he dominated. I mean, yo, you're 7 foot 12, and you only average double-digit rebounds twice. Fun's on hold. He only played 2 full seasons in his entire career. He only averaged over 20 points a game 3 times in his entire career. I just don't see him being anywhere in my Hall of Fame.
Okay.
Fun's
well,
on hold.
Let me tell you, like, kind of my thinking. I'm also on the fence, but I have, like, you know, a pro and con case for him. Some of the pros, you know, his numbers aren't great. His numbers are really good, though. You have to look at his era also, because the only real competition that he probably had in his era was an aging Shaq. So if we're going by, you know, if we're putting people in the Hall of Fame for being the best or one of the best in their era, then that would be a reason to give him an HOF. But on top of that, you have to think about what we talked about before. You have to think about impact. Now, Yao, he brought basketball to millions of people overseas. Now, you know, somebody would quickly dismiss that, like, well, you know, he's from China and they have 1 billion people, blah, blah, blah. But he's not the only player from China in the league. And when Yao Ming leaves, I don't think everybody's going to be excited over there to watch Wang Zhuzhu and you know, who else is left? There's 2 or 3 Chinese guys left in the league who aren't as good as Yao. So on top of him having that fan base, being from China, being from a place where the population is like that, you still have to be good to bring basketball to China the way he did. With that said, the injuries killed him. Like Jimmy said, he didn't play a full season too many times in his career. He may be favored when it comes around to the real Hall of Fame because he was one of the better centers in the league during his era. But I kind of think you can also attribute that to the center position being very weak for like the last 10 years. So I am on the fence because I think Yao was a really good player. I think he was almost a great player. But as far as Hall of Fame goes, I'm going to have to go FOH to Yao Ming.
Hey, Dev, real quick, a quick point. Like, it's funny because he played against, like you said, no other centers around that time. And, like, an aging Shaq. But if you take, like, two of Shaq's years, like Shaq's two best years, he has the same production as Yao did his entire career. He has, like, half the amount of points and, like, more rebounds in his two best years than Yao did for his eight-year career, in which he only played, two full seasons. Like, so his production just wasn't that great. In my personal opinion, I understand his influence, and I understand that, Austin loves the fact that of the skills he has. But to me, I don't give a damn how many skills you have. It's about your production. So
I think there's a learning curve
with
him,
understand
too.
The impact.
If that's the case, I don't want to have to call you. I don't want to have to call you a hypocrite now, brother. So Gerald Wallace and the boy Sean Marion should be at the top of your list because they have no skills and all the production in the world.
Top of my list in terms of what though?
Production. Well, we ain't talking about Hall of Fame. I'm not talking about Hall of Fame.
Care more about production. But what I'm saying is, if you don't produce, I don't care what skills you have. Take a player like, Kobe, who has the skills and he produces. If you have the skills but you don't produce, so what that you have the skills? You're good in practice. You can shoot foul shots. Whoop-de-damn-do, in the words of Derek
Coleman. But I think Yao was fairly productive, though. I don't think he was. His first year. When he first came into the league, there were some issues with him in terms of his toughness, his understanding of the game, his getting acclimated with the USA, with the, American game. And, like, his first couple years, it was a little rough for him. But I think, like, 3 years in, he started to be somewhat productive. It wasn't like he was just out there a dupe. Now, granted, you're right. He didn't play against great people. He averaged nearly 20 for four years.
Before I start getting hate mail from China, let me clear up what I'm saying. What I'm saying is he was productive. Yao was actually a great player, in my opinion, but we're talking about Hall of Fame. He just doesn't have the body of work, you're saying.
Like, he hasn't produced long enough. It was like a chunk.
I agree with you. I think the backlash is coming because I agree with you, but I think it sounds like you're kind of tearing him down. He's not a Hall of Famer probably, but you just sound like you was tearing him down.
That's why I want to clear that up. I'm not calling Yao a bum because I'm not trying to say Yao was garbage and he was a bum or he's like,
we love the China
nothing. But I'm talking about I'm trying to be more critical with his HOF game because, like you said in the beginning, our criteria is different. He probably will get into their Hall of Fame, but in terms of the Warham Hall of Fame, fun's on hold.
He's gonna get into the real Hall of Fame because Yao brought a lot of money to the game. You see how Yao could miss the whole first half of the season, and they're still going to vote him as a starter in an All-Star game. That's why I'm saying there's a difference, though, because they're not doing that for Wan Zhuzhou. Like, they have manpower over there to write them dudes into the ballot and do that. And I don't know how accurate these numbers are, but they did talk to some people, and some people in China was like, if Yao retires, I don't really have a reason to watch the NBA. So David Stern might not like this whole thing. My bad. Go ahead, Bill.
I was going to say, with me, I definitely like numbers. He's a favorite of mine, and I want him in the Hall. I do. I want him in the Hall, just like I don't want Vince in the Hall. But going purely off the numbers, you really can't put Yao in the Hall because, like Jimmy said, you could take 2 years of Twism's best production, and that's like half of Yao's production because he was injured so much. So now you're looking at 8 seasons, but reality is number of games played, he played more like 5 total. And it's like that's the sad part of his legacy because skill-wise, I saw him dominate one of the greatest centers of all time in his prime. And Yao was the truth.
Put it this way, B. Austin. injuries, like his ankle and foot injuries, put an end to a Hall of Fame. He was on the road.
On the road, yeah. That's a great.
Like I said,
that's a great
played,
point.
Yeah, he played 3-4 more years. Yao Ming was going to make it to the Hall of Fame, but now.
And then I was going to say, I was going to get one more point. Is when I look at production, I look at overall numbers, but I look at what you do per game and per 48 minutes. And per game and per 48 minutes, Yao was very, very good, if not great. When he was in the game, he was very, very good. Not enough consistent production to say he was Hall worthy, but if you look at the short span of his career, he was as good as a lot of guys that we know will make the Hall. Production-wise.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, when you do look at his numbers, right, if you look at his per-game averages, like, they now, of course, he had injuries, but they never, like, you know, his highest point per game total was in 2006, and it went down every year after that. So it wasn't like, you know, he was getting – I don't want to say he wasn't getting better because he was so injury-prone, it's hard to, like, judge his game.
We don't know whether he was getting better. He's so injury-prone.
No, but here's the thing, though. Here's the thing. Basketball Reference has his probability of going to the Hall of Fame at 31%, and that's, you know, based upon statistics. They don't take into account, you know, Dev's, like Dev said, his influence across the world.
Yeah. Yo, I look at Yao almost the same way I look at Grant. I look at Grant Hill. Yo, Grant Hill, no one could check this dude, even though the injuries were there, even though that he's still a dominant force in the game. So it's hard. But I'm saying FOH. I'm saying FOH. All
right, well, that's four FOHs. So, Yao, you're not getting into the War Room Sports Hall of Fame, even though a few of us might want you in there. Your foot gave out on you. So,
yo, and he bagged me along. Yo, I might change. Yo.
Yo, FOH to Yao. But, yo, Dev, we got an actual call, and I think they want to talk about this topic. Let's see what's going on right here. Didn't even scream. Hold up. Just trying to get this. This thing is not. Hey, Dev, you see that call there? Oh, here we go. Hello, 202.
I'll put him in the.
Oh, well, go ahead. Let me try to get this call
in. Caller, 202, you're on the line. You're in the war room. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Caller. 202-257, you're in the war room.
All right, you're no longer in the war room.
Cat got that tongue.
Let's move on to some hot topics. Yao got four FOHs from us. Sorry, Yao.
You my man still, Yao. You better than Shaq.
Yeah, anyway. Never that. I know you always like to make that comparison, but I like the people. Shout out to all my cats on YouTube that laughed at Austin even comparing Yao to Shaq, and all my people on Facebook that laughed at him. Anyway,
to the Lemmings following behind Jimmy like he the Pod Piper for Shaq.
Anyway, let me get you guys' opinion on Jeter and you know, this 3,000 ball. Shout out to Bernie Mac, rest in peace. But what's your guys' opinion on this whole fiasco with this baseball?
I think, first of all, I keep hearing people saying that this guy, what's his name, Christian Lopez, I keep hearing him saying he did the honorable thing by giving the ball back. Come on, man. People hit home runs and foul balls every day in baseball. Now, these people get up with the ball and walk out the stadium with it, and it's not so honorable then. It's just a part of the game. But because it's Jeter's 3,000th and it was a home run, you know, this guy giving it back is such an honorable deal. That dude is silly in my eyes. It's not honorable to me because, you know, they gave him about $70,000 worth of tickets, bats, and balls in exchange for him giving the ball back. And if the IRS, you know, catches wind of it, which they did because it's a national story, he could get taxed up to five figures on that. But that's a different story altogether because He told the media that he has $100,000 in school debt. There is no way that I'm giving that ball back for no damn luxury box seats that I got to pay taxes on. If I have to pay taxes on something that has to do with this baseball, it's going to be taxes on the $1 million that I charged Derek Jeter's ass to buy it back from me. If you want it that bad, then you know where to find me. I think dude's is a noodle. That's just my opinion.
Like, real quick, before y'all win, I just want to say that to me, that's the funniest thing about all of it, Dev, is like, people say, he did the honorable thing. I'm like, that's where the bar is now? That's being honorable?
Giving them.
We got some serious issues if that's where the bar is. Now, the bar is set so low that me giving back a baseball possibly worth hundreds of thousands of dollars is honorable. Funds on hold to everybody who said that. Go jump off the roof of your car.
Yo, the honorable thing would have been for Derek Jeter to say, no, keep it. I know you need it more than I do.
No, that's not honorable. Honorable thing is for him to pay that money and get it back, like everybody else.
Honorable for me would be for Derek Jeter to give him some. If dude is going to do this, then Derek Jeter should throw him something. You know what I mean? Definitely take care of his tax bill if it becomes that. But he should also throw him something. And like y'all said, I don't know what Lopez must have a small fortune somewhere that he doesn't get until he turns 25. But he's bugging with $100,000 in school debt alone. And he's talking about, I got time to make the money back in my lifetime. And that's great and all, but you're going to also accumulate debt in that lifetime too, most likely, like all of us. So I don't know what he thought. Like he said, Dev, I'd have been like, look, check this out. I got the rock. I'm taking the rock home with me. I put up a website that's taking bids. And to the victor go the spoils, man, straight up. And I'm taking me a nice check, and I'm smiling on ESPN.
Bid started at half a mil.
Exactly, a half a mil. Plus, think about it, y'all. He's in New York. You know how many rich, like, the demographic in New York, them guys will pay those dudes, those Wall Streeters that are egotistical, just to brag and say, yo, I got the 3,000 Derek Jeter ball. They will bid each other into like $5 million.
That's what I'm saying. They're gonna go crazy bidding against each other just to show everybody who got the biggest stack.
Yeah, dude
is out of his mind. Plus the new 8 series come out next year, so I definitely.
Lopez better go get him that 8. Stop tripping.
And the story has grown because actually Miller High Life has offered to pay his taxes, if the IRS man comes a knocking, and Modell's on Times Square. They said through July 13th to the 19th, every thing that they sell, all the Yankees apparel that they sell, they're going to actually donate it to this guy so he can pay off his school debts. So that's cool. He's become a story, and, his debts are going to get paid, his taxes, his school loans. But this ball could have changed your life. Like PJ said, he must have something going on that we don't know about, that the average person in America, doesn't know about, because this one little baseball could change your life.
He could have got like, that. He gave it back that day. I'd have had to think about it first. Like, hold up, let me think about it. He gave it back the same day just to get a couple jerseys signed. I'm like, come on.
He's a Derek.
Hold up, I'd be like, hold up, let me think about it.
Literally and figuratively, he's a Derek Jeter ball catcher.
Let's move on real quick. I want to ask you guys a serious question about Josh Hamilton and his demeanor after the fan died, for falling over the railing or whatever. What do you guys think about that?
It's just sad, man. I mean, it's tough. We already know that Josh Hamilton, and I'm not trying to make light out of this situation or poke fun at it, but we all know that he's had, some issues in his past, not to just poke at him. But I think it's tough, man. They said he was really, really messed up that day, like that after the game when he got the news of the guy dying. So, I mean, I don't know. It's tough, man. That's just the situation when you look at it, it's just like a bad situation. Like, the man was with his son. Like, you know what I'm saying? Trying to catch a ball. I'm like, then what's interesting, and not to get into the medical point, like the medical side of it, it's interesting that the guy was still conscious enough after the fall to say, hey, my son's up there. So, obviously they said he was bleeding from the head and was, kind of obviously groggy and in and out, but he still knew enough to say, hey, my son is up there, somebody get my son. And the people had to calm him down and say, hey, we're going to get your son, you'll be okay, just relax. And then he went later on to die. It's just a terrible situation, man. I hate to hear stuff like that.
That's a sad story.
Think about it. That little boy, Real quick, that's hard to cut you off. But that little boy, that might have been his first experience at a ball, at a baseball game. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
How would he feel going back to games in the future? His memory, that's gonna be tough, man.
Oh yeah, he's probably done with baseball, man. I mean, his dad was trying to get him a baseball, like, you know, Josh, toss me the ball, and you know, Josh Hamilton was doing the honorable thing, and this happens. The thing is, Nolan Ryan said that they actually used to have padding down on, you know, where the guy fell. But he said they took away the padding recently because they were trying to discourage fans from hanging over the railings. So I'm like,
I know the organization feels bad.
They show pictures of Josh Hamilton when he got back into the field. He just didn't look like he was in a good mind state to be playing baseball. And like PJ said, he has his drug and alcohol problems in the past. I hope this isn't like something.
Yeah,
that
I agree.
Fall off the wagon, you know.
Sending back. Yeah.
I hope he stays away from that nose candy. But it's like it's sad. It's sad, and it's gonna be one of them things that they're gonna, like, you know, make a little outside the lines documentary that had me getting up and leaving the room.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know they are.
Yeah, it's a terrible thing, man.
Somebody need to donate half a year's salary to the little kid, man.
Somebody started a scholarship fund. Didn't the Rangers start a, I mean, not a scholarship fund, but
he's going to be taken care of. The kid is cool. He's going to be taken care of, but, I mean, that's not going to bring
a lot of happiness.
That's not going to change anything. Real quick, though. Another fan almost fell over the railing at the home run derby. So the next question is, should stadiums be responsible or should fans just be smarter? What should happen with this phenomenon?
Balance both.
I don't know what more a stadium and arenas can do. I mean, if you're sitting like on the upper deck at a stadium or arena, you do. I mean, I know I do. I have in the past. Like, I think to myself, like, it's just so easy for anything to happen up here. So I mean, I think as a rational grown human being, I mean, you should just know, like, you can't go hanging
off.
Be
careful.
Railings, I know you want this baseball or whatever, these T-shirts that they're shooting up here, but it's really not that serious to get seriously injured or lose your life.
Yeah, I didn't see hip-hop make a lot of people.
But did you guys see the guy? Did you see the guy, though, at the home run derby? Like, his friend and his brother saved his life, like grabbing him by the leg. And he's still reaching for the ball as they're trying to, you know, pull him up.
he gets mad at them, like, why you grab me?
The thing is, it would be hard for arenas to dummy-proof the stadium and the arena while still giving you the same experience. I mean, you don't want to be in a bubble. You want to have some interaction with or being close to the field or being able to catch those balls and things like that. But,
it can't make it like
hockey where it's just like a big screen that just goes all the way up to the ceiling, though, that go around the whole zone. So nobody can, like you know, like a force field. I mean, if they did that, nobody would want, you know, they might as well watch it from home. So it's a little of both, but I say the onus is definitely on the fan. Like, seriously, like Dad said, yo, you, like hundreds of feet up in the air and, like, the nosebleeds or whatever, don't go diving over the rail for a baseball, because, seriously, you tripping. Like, you know, and unfortunately this happened, so maybe you would think people would be smarter, but then look at the home run derby.
But you know what the biggest
In our chat room, Naran says half his salary. That's ridiculous. It's an unfortunate accident. You can't cash in on tragic events. He said, like, cats who want to be paid over 9/11. That's his analogy. So he's saying that, you know, it's a tragic event and you shouldn't look to cash in on it. Naran, we're in America. That's what we do.
I was about to say, you shouldn't.
Events.
You shouldn't, but that's the name of the game.
Anyway,
I mean, lady got $2 million because she spilled coffee on her own lap.
I was just about to say the coffee incident.
Speak for yourself. I'm cashing in.
I just want to clear this up. I just watched a documentary on that, and that's the story that McDonald's put out there. That wasn't the truth about that case, and it's a whole documentary on it. It's on HBO. It's called Hot Coffee.
It's called Coffee. It's called Hot Coffee.
Tell my friend if anything happened to him, I expect that, you know, he's not cashing in on that. No lawsuit.
Look, this is America. That's what we do. We live in a litigious society. So, I mean, anyway, that's either here nor there. It's very unfortunate what happened. it's very unfortunate what happened. So, I mean, I want to see what's going to happen. I don't know what the answer is, but, you know.
Real quick, Jimmy, what I was about to say, the biggest dummy proofing of them all, and I'm not saying this was the case in the Texas Rangers situation, but it has. They might have to do some kind of legislation on alcohol at these games, man. I know it's a lot of people out there that's like, no! Like, what are you talking about?
That's what people go to the games for.
You can't tell me that the dude at the home run derby wasn't drunk. That dude was
drunk.
Yeah, he was drunk. That's not happening, yo. That's not happening. There's not, no way.
They already stopped at a certain time.
You're the biggest sponsors, and if they want to cut us a check, I will drink during the show. But outside of that, they make a lot of money off alcohol at these games. That'll never happen.
Yeah.
And no, like Brad said,
they need to raise the prices or something.
Yeah.
Even beyond the fact that you may go to an Eagles game like a couple hours before and cats be already in the parking lot. Yeah, I mean, they be drunk going in.
That's true. A lot of them.
Because they can get a case on the street. Cheaper than they get one or two beers in the stadium, so they get drunk during the tailgate, and then
most people that get wasted like that too do it during tailgating because it's taking a lot of drinks, and you spend like $200 trying to get that drunk at the by yourself at a daggone game. Drink like
$30. Like three beers.
Exactly. These cats pull up right in the parking spot.
Yeah.
My last question, for you guys, concerning the home run derby and everything is. I want to know what your overall reaction is to the home run derby. Did you watch it?
Jimmy? Is it me or is 3 hours too long for a home run derby? I'm not going to say
the first round and the last round was exciting,
but 3 hours is too long, man. Like, I dozed off. I was in and out of sleep throughout the whole thing.
The home run derby was longer than the All-Star game, if y'all know. I don't know if y'all know, but it was longer than the actual All-Star game. That's too long, man.
What event at any All-Star game do you want
to...
Something wrong with your mic, Jim. But at any All-Star game do you want to be 3 hours long? That's like...
That's as long as
All-Star Saturday night.
That's the whole night. Yeah, yep. It's the whole night. Because the night from like 8 to 11.
Now, going to the actual derby, you know, there were some exciting performances in it, but I think that they should do something as far as cutting down the first round somehow. We had a member on our page the other day who said that they should probably make the first round maybe like 5 outs instead of 10. And, you know, that'll probably cut down. You know, you get those guys out, you move on to the next round and go from there. But I think 3 hours is too long, no matter how. There was about 95 home runs hit.
That was ridiculous, man. Come on, that was utterly ridiculous, man.
How many times do you want to hear Berman saying, back, 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 back? I'm like, all right.
He sounded like a rooster.
He played out in like 97. He's been out of here.
Chris Berman is living off heat from the last century.
Yeah, in our chat room, Sports City Chef said that when we were talking about tailgating, he said, yeah, that's true. He said, I went to a Phillies game once, and I got drunk at the tailgate, and I missed half the game. So that's one. That's, we have a tailgater in our chat room telling us that that's the truth. You get drunk before you go into the game.
Man, you got it. Man, you go broke trying to get drunk.
Drink, huh?
No doubt. But yeah, in terms of the home run derby, it was way too long. I really only wanted to see a couple people at bat anyway. I was trying to see Big Poppy, take his
Florida
turn or what have
child.
You.
That's a Dominican
too,
love
too
child.
Long. Yeah, yo.
Like her, man. Shout out to Robinson Cano for his performance and his little, you know, touching moment with his dad. They kind of blew that out of proportion because, to me, it wasn't all that touching because it was only a damn home run derby. So, you know.
It wasn't touching to me because his pop was throwing curveballs to everybody else when he took, you know, his turn to throw. He pitched one more person. I forgot who it was. He was throwing them, like, you know, stuff with junk. He was throwing them sinkers and curves.
He was using his stuff.
Yeah, he was using his stuff.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Mr. Cano got stuff.
Too bad he ain't having when he played. He wouldn't have played only one season. Anyway, now to the All-Star game. What's you guys' opinion of the All-Star game? Did you even watch the All-Star game? And what's your observations? What did you take from the All-Star game?
I watched it. The game was pretty good. I'm glad that the NL won, being a Phillies fan, since we all pretty much think we have a chance to go back to the World Series. Having home field advantage doesn't hurt. It was a pretty good game. Doc Holliday, you know, Brent's favorite person in the whole world, he pitched two good innings. The only run that the AL got was a home run off of Cliff Lee. So Cliff Lee was the reason that Doc Holliday didn't get the win. Tyler Clippert from the Nationals got the win. He faced one batter, threw three pitches, and gave up a single, but he was the pitcher of record when the NL took the lead. He got the win. Prince Fielder pretty much saved the day with his three-run blast. I mean, it was a pretty good game. So, yeah.
Now, before you guys go, let me ask you guys, I'm going to put another question out there into the mix. And it's probably something we could talk about another show, because I know there's a lot of you want to say about this. But overall, what is going on with All-Star games? Because to me, it's just not this. I don't have, like, the passion to want to watch them anymore like I used to. I want to see every All-Star game. It seems to me that they're all whacked now. NBA, the Pro Bowl's always been horrible. Baseball, to me, is like
sports.
Mm-hmm.
Now, see, now they tried to do something in baseball.
The Pro Bowl is not the Pro Bowl is not football. That's something else.
It's Pro Bowl, but in baseball they tried to make rules that will get people watching, which is, you know, to put home field advantage to the World Series to the winner, which I think is really stupid because that's too important for an exhibition game. And people obviously still don't care because 16 people bailed on the game in the, you know, during the week.
Yo, if I make the All-Star team and I play for the Pirates, do I care that the NL gets home field advantage? Like home, you know, do I really care? In our chat room again, Naran said the best part of the whole All-Star game was Justin Timberlake ripping on Joe Buck.
Yo, that interview was real awkward. And first of all, Timberlake was drunk. I think Mark Grace, who was interviewing, might have been a little twisted himself. Joe Buck was irritated because Mark Grace talked to Timberlake for like 5 minutes and didn't ask him what he was supposed to ask him about. So Joe Buck snuck it in there like, yo, ask him if his movie's any good. Like what are you talking about down there?
Yeah, I'm not a Joe Buck fan, so I kind of enjoyed it. It did look like Justin Timberlake was hanging out with Sports City Chiefs and getting getting his little buzz on before he got into place.
Are you saying that
Justin Timberlake had those purple flowers?
Yo, I don't know what you're talking about. Yo, but I want to say shout out to Justin Timberlake because the Bulls don't even make music no more. He just like shows up at like random events. He's like just a celebrity now, just for being a celebrity. So
he's just
a
feature.
Yeah,
he's a feature right
up.
Now.
He's like Saturday Night Light. It shows up at places. But anyway,
well, back to that home field with the World Series. That is really idiotic for it to hinge upon the winning of the All-Star game. Because I mean, out of the last 25 World Series games, the team that had home field advantage won 21 times. So 21 times out of the last 25 was the team that won had home field advantage. So I mean, I don't know if that's just coincidence or what, but I mean, that's just how it shakes out. And they're giving that to the winner of an All-Star game. What do you say?
I said, how do you feel about all the games now? Or do you feel the same?
Yeah, right.
I
mean,
like
the quality is just gone. I mean, out of all of them, I like the NBA. Out of all of them, if I still had to pick one, I would say the NBA is the one I still roll with, and it's the most entertaining to me. I don't know what happened to baseball, because at one point when, like, Ricky Henderson and them dudes played, man, at one point I feel like it used to be good, but I think since
they played like they was trying to win.
Yeah, they were serious about it without them having to throw these stupid incentives out there. Now you throw the incentive of the World Series, but, you know, if you're not one of the top teams in the league, why the hell you care about that?
Yeah, no.
Do you think, let me ask you another question. Do you think that interleague play is kind of like, you know, is a problem? Because before, the only time you can get to see, like, your favorite players from each league play each other was the World Series. There was no interleague play, so the World Series and the All-Star game now, you know, cats got the same agents. They play interleague play, so it's a lot different.
Yeah. Well, you're right, because they might, you know, they have more to prove, like, yo, we got to beat these guys. But at the same time, I do like interleague play during the season. I just think they need to adapt one solid set of rules for the whole league. Like, either you're going to have a designated hitter or you're not. But, having different rules, I think it's a little bit silly.
Designated hitters are for suckers. I hate the DH. I think a pitcher should bat in every league. That's either here nor there. Go ahead.
Yeah. All
right, well,
how did y'all feel about this year's NBA All Star game, and for in terms of competitive level?
I mean, I still enjoy it. I don't know, maybe because basketball is my sport. I just think that I still enjoy that better. Like, I just enjoy the athleticism. I mean, a lot of guys with the Eagles try to do this and do that, showing people up. Granted, there's no defense, but, I mean, I don't know. I like to see the monkey, the primal, leaping ability and athleticism come out. I like that.
Well, to answer your question, I was like 4 or 5 months ago, so I don't give a damn. But
let's move on,
Doug.
Go ahead,
Deb.
You got it.
All right, so let's move on to some more hot topics. We talked about this is a surprise that just happened today. Now, we were going to talk about the Clemens trial, and we basically were going to talk about the trial just getting started, the jury selection, you know, what the judge said. But today a bombshell dropped, and the judge ruled the trial a mistrial because of evidence that he felt wouldn't have given Roger Clemens a fair trial. So what do you guys think about that? That's what you think, Bielsa? You think he's a fan? I mean, it's not necessarily 100% over yet because they're supposed to have another hearing to see whether they can do a new trial. They're basically going to see if doing a new trial would fall under the double jeopardy law. So he might still go on trial. Maybe this judge was trying to get out of it. Maybe he is a fan. But if you actually, you know, do the math on it, do some of the research and listen to what the legal experts were saying, it really wasn't the judge's fault. It was the prosecution's fault. The stuff that they were doing, they were warned twice, two different times. They brought in evidence that the judge had already told them that they couldn't use. Go ahead, PJ.
I'm just piggybacking off what you said. The judge told them twice that it was inadmissible. So they tried to, and it was basically they were trying to use some hearsay, saying that this is what somebody else said. So it came from two different sources, like two hops. Like one person said it, and then they were trying to, and they told this person told them, so they're like, yeah, that person said it, this person said it. So it was like that. So, like you said, the judge said it was inadmissible, so they couldn't talk about it. So these jokers tried to play a video. Have the video play what they wanted to say. And the judge actually felt like, they said that the type of mistake that they made was something that not even a first-year, like, law student would make. Like, you know better than trying to do what you're doing. You really are acting stupid.
Hey,
so,
PJ,
like
I guess they were like,
not
look,
the
man,
judge.
You said we couldn't say it. You didn't say the video couldn't say it.
You said we couldn't show it. You ain't
and what they were
trying
showing.
To be too smart. Everybody think they too cool for school, and they can outsmart everybody. Like, come on, man, with the dumb, you're going to play it on video.
The problem is, you know, I don't want to, you know, talk about other trials, but there's been recent trials in the news where it's the same situation. The prosecutors are buck wild, yo. They watch too much Law and Order. They try to get their Jack McCoy on. What are they doing? Like, yo,
and
you can't disrespect
the evidence,
judge like that.
The evidence that they tried to show was a video of Elijah Cummings. He was quoting Andy Pettit's wife saying that, yeah, Andy told me in 1999 that Roger told him that he used HGH. That is bogus evidence. That's like PJ said, that's like eighth person hearsay. And he told him that it couldn't be used, so they tried to show the video anyway. The judge stopped it. And the thing is, when the judge called them up to the stand to have a little private talk with the counselors, they put the video on pause, and the video had captions. So they left the captions there, basically what they wanted the jury to see anyway. So they're going to try to say, okay, we're going to tell the jury to disregard what they heard or what they saw, but they left it paused with the captions up on the television for the jury to see for like 10 minutes. So, if you're human, you can't get that out of your head.
Them lawyers is dirty. Yo, I got a lot of friends that are attorneys, so I can't. But, some lawyers, man, like, seriously,
like,
they just as bad as wreck chasers.
Yo, but it's kind of crazy because, like, yo, I went to law school. The first thing they tell you is you can't piss a judge. Yo, because first off, most judges are arrogant, and I think a lot of them have to be to hold that position. But they, like, disrespected him in a sense by doing that. How many
times
they look
at the courtroom as, like, their house.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Disrespecting. They are very, like you said, Jim. Yeah. Yep.
Yo,
they call
you. That's because, yo, do you know who the prosecutor was down there?
No, I don't.
Yeah, you might see me all blue, all red, every day, every day. I'm 50 Tyson.
Yeah, I think 50 Tyson was the prosecutor. So
man,
that was the problem
Tyson.
Right there, yo. Because anybody knows
Tyson
you can't disrespect a judge like that, yo. Shout out to my man Roger Clemens, too. Because the whole thing with the Roger Clemens trial, Dev, and I know that you were posting like a lot of things on the Facebook page, and I was reading the responses in terms of the trial going on. But when I think about it, what was the point of it anyway in terms of being Roger Clemens? Even if you won that trial, nobody believes that you're clean, so what's the
point?
But
the BPs were in the house, though, because, you know, the first thing they were saying is, you know, white man beats the system again, and if he was black, this and that. And
Come on, man.
If
Barry Lamar is doing a bid now.
If your prosecutor didn't get his degree from the YMCA, then, you know, if you wanted Roger to go up, he might be going up right now.
Yo, they got the prosecutor from the prosecutor from the mock trial team from the high school down the street.
Yo, this prosecutor got his degree from ITT Tech.
DeVry, they had a DeVry legal team.
All right, so like we said, we had planned on talking about other things, other components of the trial, but since the trial only lasted a few days, hey, I guess that's it. So moving on to the NBA, I know you guys heard that the Timberwolves finally made it official and fired Kurt Rambis after 90 days of dragging him through the mud and embarrassing him. I don't know what he did to deserve the treatment that he got, but does anybody have any insight on, like, what was the awkward, you know, the hold up and the embarrassment? What was that about? I know his record sucked. What did he have?
That's what gave Beasley the green light. He gave Beasley the green light, so they had to pay him back for that.
So they had to embarrass
him. Right. Yeah, it definitely seemed like an embarrassment or an attempt to embarrass Kurt, and I don't know what that you never see that. Like, you very rarely see that. So I don't know what that was about. I'm sure it's more than meets the eye. But whatever it is, they haven't let it leak yet. But it's got to be something there.
First of all, they were interviewing Bernie Bickerstaff for his job before they even fired him. There were rumors of maybe Don Nelson because, you know, with Rubio, they can probably run his up-tempo, retarded basketball style. did y'all remember, like a few weeks ago, they actually made Kurt Rambis write, like, a report.
Why?
Kurt Rambis has a pretty good reputation in basketball circles, but they treated him like Stanley down the block.
They told I could go up to the chalkboard and write 100 times that I will be a better coach.
I'm telling y'all, he got the nappy dugout from the owner's wife. That's the only reason you would disrespect him like that, yo.
Yeah,
that's usually what turns men into start acting petty like that. Typically has something to do with
a
chick.
He got it with some woman or he stole some dough. One or the other.
Yeah, it's booty or money. Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think Kurt Rambis will land on his feet. He probably won't be a head coach next year, but he's definitely going to be on somebody's staff next year. So, and they still have to pay him. So he's good. He wins. Because, you know, did you really want to coach there? Or were you just doing it because that was the job available for you at the time? So, in the end, he wins besides the embarrassment because, like I said, they got to pay him. He gets to move on somewhere else. Probably best-case scenario. So, there's two other coaching jobs that just got filled. Brian Shaw is the assistant coach in Indiana now. We'll go back to that in a second. But Jelly Bean Bryant, father of Kobe Bryant, is now the head coach of the L.A. Sparks in the WNBA. Like, I'm not used to the Sparks stinking. You know, not like I follow WNBA like Kill does, but Sparks are usually good. And they're not so good. Coach got fired, so they hired Jelly Bean for his second stint with the team.
Well, who was the coach before him? Like, because I know when they were good when Cooper was there, but how long has it been since Cooper left?
Like 2 years, right? 2-3 years.
I think we need a kill on the show.
Oh yeah,
kill
yeah. Kill no. That's yeah, but I know that. I think Cooper left, and Cooper was the reason they were winning. But you know, who knows?
Cool.
I mean, look, Jelly Bean. He like I said, this is his second stint with the team. I believe he made the playoffs with them 1 year, like 05, 06 or something like that.
Jelly has a pretty decent coaching pedigree, and has had a lot of success overseas in Japan specifically. So
yeah, I mean, and he groomed one of the greatest players that we've seen. So I'm pretty sure he knows how to teach the game if
he
it needs to be taught. But at the same time,
do y'all think
he got that job because he's Kobe's dad, or do you think it was just a legitimate hire?
To me,
it's both. Nepotism is alive and well in America.
Well, it's the L.A. Sparks. I don't care.
All right, so we'll let Kill get down on that when he's back next week. Let's go back to the Brian Shaw thing, because I think I think his departure from the Lakers, you know, I'm the first one to tell you I don't really believe in loyalty in sports. I really don't think there's a place for it, because at the end of the day, it's a business, and people are doing what they want to do with their organizations. So, but at the same time, he was the guy who Kobe wanted on the bench for the Los Angeles Lakers. They hire Fan Brown, and now I don't know if he didn't get an offer to stay from Coach Brown, or if he just decided, like, I'm not working for this cat because I'm better than this cat, so I'm out. But he's in Indiana now, and they just got a new head coach. So it seems like Brian Shaw is back to square one, kind of, you know? Like, anybody feel anything for the dude?
Yo.
That's tough, man. He just made a... He just made a horizontal move. Like, he didn't need, it's not like he advanced.
I didn't even know if it was horizontal. At least he was assisting coach on the championship team.
He went to a worse team, so he went, like,
he coaching, coaching psycho. He coaching Psycho T and Josh McRoberts now.
But I think he had to make that move though. He definitely had to make that move.
Yo, wouldn't you? You can't be under Fan Brown, yo, and you know more
than
that.
It had nothing to do with him, because a lot of the assistants that are under Brown aren't even being hired by Brown. From what I'm hearing, honestly, is that from people out there that Jim Buss is like just completely revamping how things are done out there.
My man can't hire his own assistants.
Yo, an example of that is he didn't even reach out to Kobe to consult about the coach. And a lot of people that work for the organization, he just let their contracts expire without even contacting them. Like, so he's like just trying. He's completely taken over, and he's letting people know who's in charge. So
yeah, and he's
Brian
patching
Shaw,
the staff together like Frankenstein or something, like from all his pieces. He don't care about what Mike Brown wants. But go ahead,
and
you
and
say
that's
Brian
exactly
Shaw.
The point. He's letting people know who's in control. And the thing is, Dr. Jerry Buss never conducted himself this way. It was more of a family with the Lakers. And now it's one of them things you see in regular business. And also, you probably can relate to this when you see like a family business and the kids take over the business and, you know, things
and
change.
And running into the ground.
A lot of times for the
world. Yo. I feel you, but let me just say this. Mike Brown don't care what Mike Brown wants. He just happy.
Wouldn't you be? He got a nice check.
Yeah. True.
Yeah, he is the coach of the Los Angeles Lakers now. That's
He's
not
the coach
like...
of the Lakers. He gets to live in L.A., and he got a nice check.
Yo, but he can't coach better than anybody, nary a brother on this show.
He can interview better than everybody on the show.
Yeah, he still got a nice check.
Oh.
All right, but Bill, yeah, so that's Brian Shaw's story for now. But, and I mean, and Jim Buss is out there. Now, these are reports. We don't know if it's really true or not, but he seemed like he's out there trying to make Andrew Bynum the man on the team.
I heard that.
You know,
I heard that.
He's tripping. Not that there's anything wrong with Bynum, but he's tripping.
Yeah, I mean, but he's another injury-prone big man, so it's like, do you really want to mortgage your future on something that's uncertain? Because I hear that it's so bad that, you know, with them talking about the rumors of Dwight Howard to L.A., I'm hearing that he's putting the kibosh on that because he still just doesn't want to get rid of Andrew Bynum. Come on, man. I sell Andrew Bynum's mom to Orlando.
What I heard is that when he took over, when his dad put him in position to take over, that was one of his first moves. So that's like his thing. So he like believes in Andrew Bynum to the point where, like from what I'm hearing, like he has a chance to get Dwight. And like you said, he's not even, you know, working that. His whole thing is I'm going to ride with Bynum, and I'm going to run this organization my way. My father's way of doing things is over. So we'll see what happens with the Los Angeles Lakers, because their reputation as an organization was like first class and doesn't seem that way no more.
Right. All right, so keeping it in the NBA, let's get out of L.A. for a minute. Well, this is kind of Hollywood, but it's Philadelphia to Hollywood, because Elton Brand is going to be a producer on a movie about Tupac.
Tupac's back.
And the director is going to be Antoine Fuqua. So it should be a pretty, you know, the movie should be real. It shouldn't be just a straight up B movie. It should be a pretty good movie, I guess, something like Notorious was for Big. But Jimmy,
first off,
I know
Pac, let me say something.
I know Pac is an icon all around our country, and maybe a little bit outside. But what do you think about a movie for Pac? You think he was worth it?
Now listen, he may have had an extraordinary life, which may translate well to film. But in terms of being a rapper, and I don't care what nobody in the chat room will listen to, will say to me, Tupac was trash. He's overrated. He has Stanleys that are willing to die for him, but that does not make him an MC. Tupac, trash, and I said it. At JW.
Hey, Jim, I concur with you. I never was really a Pac fan, especially in the Pac Biggie days of competition and feuding. I was definitely riding with B.I. Rest in peace.
I wish Pac could join this discussion.
I don't. This is what I don't understand. Yo, hey, Brad, tell me this. Where did Pac get so many Stanleys from? Because that's what I remember back in the day, right, when Pac was alive, when he was the new West Coast Warrior Pac. Yo, cats over here, I knew cats that was in Philly that was like, yo, I would die for Pac today. Like, they would die for Pac. Never met him, don't know him, but they followed the boy like that. I wish that
I could join this conversation and offer an alternative perspective, but to be honest, I just be pacifying the masses when I say that I respect dude. I mean, I respect dude, but as a lyricist, yo, Pac wasn't better than me, yo.
Lyrically,
he wasn't better than me lyrically.
I'm not gonna say every one of his songs was trash, but he never made a complete album.
I'm a straight rider. You don't wanna boom boom ding. And honestly, the production on that song was better than his lyrics.
I'm gonna try and go in a different direction. I mean, I actually agree with y'all, but what it is, you know, it's about what your taste is with art, and I think that the four of us, well, I say the five, everybody on the War Room is really, we're focused on lyrical content and the ability to translate your intellect into the way that you express what's on your heart and what comes out. Pac had a charisma about him as a performer, like, that appealed to people, and so a lot of folks aren't as deep into the lyrical content as we are, and so the topics that he rhymed about, well, I don't even know that he rhymed most of the time, but the topics of his song. The topics of his songs appeal, you know, Brenda Got a Baby. He appealed to the average cat in the hood that and beyond the hood that really didn't apply the same intellectual expression to their rhymes, but talked about how
right,
well,
I think
his
was message, trash, man. Stop trying to be
I think
nice.
His, I think
trash.
His message. I don't think he was a bad rapper per se, but I think his message was real like all over the place sometimes. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, he definitely was.
He wanted to be. He wanted to be a revolutionary. He wanted to be a revolutionary at one point. And then, you know, he wanted to kill everybody on the East Coast at another point.
But I'll be honest, Rich, real quick, has nothing to, I mean, It's like that didn't bother me. I just think that lyrically he was trash. But I think Naran is in our chat room trying to like get us attacked again, because you know most people love Pac, and I did Pac is trash, and now Naran is in our chat room trying to diss Jay-Z, and I'm gonna leave
right,
that
well,
alone because we only can diss
we'll
one.
We'll do that on we have a sports
that's another
hip-hop shows thing. That we'll do all this stuff on. So like Jimmy
Pac
said, his life was very interesting, so it should translate into a very good movie. They have a very good director. So shout out to Elton Brand and Fuqua for putting that out. I'm looking forward to seeing it. Moving on from that, young man Pac-Man Jones was arrested again for resisting arrest in the club.
Yo.
Why was he in the club with a neck brace
on?
Why is
give
he
that? Give him the electric chair. Give him the electric chair. The chair. That's him.
Yeah, his mugshot was hilarious because he looked like a Fraggle Rock in the house. He looked like a hospitalized Fraggle Rock that was burnt by like an explosion.
Yo, I hate dude. I hate dude.
Yo,
yo I
he
hate
need
it.
To find his. He need to find a
yo,
pit of unfortunate and join Jason Peters and just get buried in there and just stay in there and just get steamrolled and cemented and just frozen in like the ground and never come up. Again,
said,
I had nothing better to say, but the fact that I hate him, that's it. That's all I
know.
Right,
yeah. I mean, Pac-Man, now this time he's claiming that, you know, his reputation kind of preceded him. He said he didn't do anything.
He needs
got
to give his life
for.
To God and Jesus, man.
Right.
Come on.
Yo, but all I want to say real quick is that I was listening to the Broad Street Line, our homies over there last night. And he made a point, which I agree with. He said, that was the funniest mugshot since Nick Nolte's joint. Y'all remember Nick Nolte's joint?
Nick Nolte looked like
that
they
was
had
the number one
150 bolts shooting through his body, cuz.
That's
Nick
the funniest
Nolte looked like he got electrocuted.
Because this dude always gets in trouble in clubs. Like, why? Like, if you
club.
Were in a neck, because that wasn't like the regular old, you know, the little soft neck break joint that you get when you were in a small car accident. Like, he was in some serious neck break that you get after surgery. Like,
yeah,
really,
he had surgery.
He
had a herniated disc.
The joint that was up under his jawbone. Like, you can't even eat with them jaws on. Well, how are you going to be in the club with that? When you can't even look behind you.
His face was pointed to the ceiling all night. Like, why did he need to be in the club?
Yo, let me ask y'all something. Do you think there's something like, is there a club addiction? Do you think that's an illness where you can just be addicted
to the club?
Nah,
but I do think, Bull, Bull got a problem. Bull got a problem.
I don't think
he
has an addiction. You know how some cats just can't stay out the club? Like, you be like, yo, you still in the club? Like, I mean, you know, a lot of chicks do it. A lot of chicks have club addiction.
Pac-Man got a problem. Whether he did it or not, I mean, it's not like the 18 million arrests before that, you know, changes anything. So if you didn't do it,
yo,
we don't look
quick,
at you any better. But let's move. Real quick.
What pains me about dude is talent-wise, he's one of the top 20 talents in the league at his position, yo.
Oh,
he's just blowing it.
It's only 30 at his position. It's like, no. But no, I'm just...
He ain't. I disagree, but I don't want to spend that much time on Pac-Man. I've seen T.O. light that boy up in practice. Like, his talent...
Cowboys
practice,
he was giving him work.
He just said, okay, but if you're saying he's top 20, he shouldn't, you know, it should at least be a contest. T.O. went on TV during that little reality show that they were having, Hard Knocks or whatever, went on there, first time against the boy, like, yo, I'm about to dog you, cuz. Went out there and dogged
you. He shouldn't burn
that
trash out of him. He burned the damn out of Pac-Man that night, too, cuz. I remember seeing that.
Better than D'Angelo Hall. It's like,
all right,
T.O. had the tights on
Cowboys,
and all of that. Looked like a fairy.
Cowboys. Brad mentioned this a little bit earlier in his PTR. And we actually had our homie Emmanuel on our Facebook page after Brad said that Michael Irvin was gay. He said that Michael Irvin's not gay. So if you didn't hear about the story, we're going to give you a little background. Michael Irvin posed on the cover of Out Magazine, which is the number one gay men's magazine in the country. Basically, he had a brother who was gay who died of cancer. And Michael Irvin is basically supposed to be a champion for his cause right now. So he posed on the cover of Out, shirtless, with some young shoulder pads from like the 1940s, with pulling his pants down so you could see his drawers. So
wait,
this is my
and the grease.
I think you can champion I think you could champion any cause you want and be noble for doing it. But I think by posing on a men's gay magazine, if you're saying that you're not gay, by posing on this men's gay magazine shirtless, greased up, showing your underwear with this crazy look on your face, I think you're kind of perpetuating the stereotypes of gay men. So it's like, what was your point of doing that if it wasn't for the attention? And if you're out for the attention, then are you really true for your cause? That's the question I have about it. Like, I just don't understand why he had to, why he couldn't get on there with a nice polo shirt on and represent for his brother. And he
that's a great point. And I saw that you made that point on our Facebook page, facebook.com/warroomsports, all one word. And I agree, because I think, number one, he's known as an attention whore, and that's who Michael Irvin is. So that in and of itself puts his credibility at risk. And then, as you say, he's perpetuating a stereotype, so you're really discounting the value of what you're standing up for. And if you're gay, which I think he is, there's no problem. Just come out and say you're gay. I mean, it's nothing wrong with, yo, I think coming out of the closet, yo, let everybody know where you stand. You know, don't front like it, you know, it's for your brother. And nah, it was for you. And that if you want to stand up for gay men's rights, there's nothing wrong with that. You can do it, homie. You did it. But I think that he's also an attention whore, and he realizes his 15 seconds of fame are running on E, because that's why he was doing all the reality shows. So now he's found a new way and a new low to stoop to. That's my take.
He just prostituting himself. When I first saw magazine cover, I was it shocked me. I wasn't really ready for him. And like you said, Dev, he had like a crazy look on his face. It almost looked like he was trying to be, yeah, exactly. It was like, come here, delicious. He had to come in delicious face. And I'm like, whoa, Mike, I'm not like, yo, I don't want to see you like that right now, boss. I mean, like, yo, seriously, I just want to associate you with the Cowboys and
having a crazy voice. I wanted to go in there and say, look, if y'all going to put me in this, somebody going to have to put something in my backside if I'm going to go in.
It's like, no, but I don't know how it went down, but I'm going to just tell you this right now. Yo, I think homie gay. If he gay, he gay. Just like Brad Hill. If he gay, he gay. Do what you got to do. But
I don't know.
He's a gay or he's a gay. His shoulder pads looked like they was a, looked like a choker.
Yeah,
his
shoulder, shoulder pads
were on the soft side.
They were
low on the
soft side. I don't know if he is in fact gay, but he was looking like the boy Lamar from the Revenge of the Nerds. But I think that it worked, though, because if you think about it, if he didn't do all that nonsense, we probably wouldn't be talking about it, other than the, like, you know, a quick pass by. Like,
but we're talking about him. So
this
we're not
what I'm
talking
thinking.
About the issue. It's not the
issue.
We're talking
true.
About him.
Which is true.
So,
but he still brought a lot of heat to the.
But that's what I was saying. If it's really for the cause, then why do you seem to be trying to draw attention to yourself? You know
and,
what I'm saying? If it's for the cause.
You're playing into the stereotype. You're playing into the stereotype as well, because, look, I have nothing against people who are, you know, homosexuals, but at the same time, you're going along with the stereotype.
That's why he's dressed like a woman on the show.
And he's going to keep denying that he's gay. Then, you know, what you're doing is risky just for some attention. Because if you just wanted to be a champion for your brother's cause, pose on the joint like a normal human, like a normal dude. I ain't going to say that. Like a normal dude and give a good interview. So when people open up the magazine, you gave a good interview. You let people know what you wanted them to know about the cause, and that's that. So, look, we'll just ask the question on our Facebook page and let the people answer it on Facebook and Twitter. Because we're going to move
You've
on.
Done
because
it.
The team that's been making the most noise during the offseason, during this lockout, is the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, they're supposed to be, you know, the Roonies. Everybody's supposed to be nice and noble and upstanding. And so here's the first thing. Hines Ward got arrested for DUI. I guess he was still partying from his win on Dancing with the Stars. So his DUI led to a Twitter beef between Ray Rice of the Ravens and Ryan Clark of the Steelers. Let me show you how this started. When the news dropped, Ray Rice tweeted, "Well, it looks like Hines Ward will miss week one when the lockout ends. DUI charge, not a good look." Ryan Clark responded to him. So glad you could weigh in. Thanks. He said, so Ray Rice then said, it's whatever you want to do, bro. You know how to find me. First of all, what did he say to make the dude, like, tell him wherever, whatever you want to do? Like, come on, Ray Rice.
Yeah. He must have just left the gym when he wrote that. He was feeling himself.
Yeah. He was a little excited. Whatever you want to do, bro. So Clark, trying to play the calm guy, he told him, I hear you, brother. Thought we were all better than that. Wouldn't speak negative of you. I'll find you. It's not hard. God bless. So he was trying to, you know, kill me with the calm. You know, when dudes calm, they kind of scare people. Like, he might know something that I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that started that little Twitter beef between them. So what do y'all think about another, before we get to the main topic, what do y'all think about another Twitter bang, and what do y'all think about Hines Ward's DUI?
I liked Ryan Clark's response. Too bad he's not good.
I know,
it would be better if he was good, but he's not really good. He's just an extra man out there on the defense. He like, yo, we short.
He's just a number.
We got 10. We short. We got 10. We need 11 to run. Oh, yeah, come on. Come on, boy.
Ryan, bring it, please.
You rather see them try to drag the choir boy, Troy Polamalu, into it because, you know, he really got a shot at hurting Ray Rice
Troy will pound Ray Rice's face into a pulp and then say something nice.
Catch it. Troy wouldn't even tweet back. He would just try to kill him the first time they play on the first game.
He tried to do PO last year.
off with his head. But, yeah, I think it's just silly, man. It's stupid. Again, Twitter, the electronic thuggery. I don't know. It's just silly. And, like, with Hines, I mean, you just got to be more responsible. Yeah, you just got to be. I mean, got to be more responsible. You out clubbing, drinking, you know. Well, not necessarily even clubbing. You could have left the restaurant. So if you're drinking, be more responsible, dog. That's all I can say.
I'm going to go with something that you said a while back, Dev. Why do these dudes drive? Brody, why do these dudes drive with all these millions? No car service?
Yeah.
That's interesting, too. I don't understand why they don't do
that. Damn, get a yellow cab. If you don't want to be snooty about it, get a yellow cab. Like, it's crazy, man. But Jimmy, finish this off so we can go on to what y'all really want to talk about.
I'm make a quick point. In terms of the Twitter beef, it's good for me. It's entertaining, and I have something to bring to the show. So keep entertaining me, you idiots. But, I mean, it is what it is.
You idiots.
All right.
Yeah.
So, like I said, the Pittsburgh Steelers have been making ripples. Man, James Harrison came out yesterday and made waves. Now, he was doing an interview with, what's the name of that magazine that he was?
Men's Journal?
Men's Journal.
So he had a lot of comments about Roger Goodell. But before I even read those comments, which are probably the worst ones, I'm going to read the ones that he had about his own teammates. All right. This is on the 2000. Okay. This is on the two interceptions that Roethlisberger threw in the Super Bowl. Dude said, hey, at least throw a pick on their side of the field instead of asking the D to bail you out again or hand the ball off and stop trying to act like Peyton Manning. You ain't that and you know it, man. You just get paid like he does. Like, really?
Damn.
So then he had comments about Troy Polamalu. They weren't bad, but, you know, he was basically calling him a choir boy like I just did. He said he's the one guy in football I respect absolutely because he's spiritual and lives it like he talks it. You know, he gets more flags than anyone on our team but never gets fined for nothing. He's so polite and talks so softly that he could probably tell Goodell to kiss his ass and Goodell would smile and say thank you. Then back to the Super Bowl, he called his teammate Rashard Mendenhall a fumble machine. So Rashard actually got on the Twitter and put a link to his statistics to prove to everybody that he only fumbled twice last season. So he got under his skin. But as tough as James Harrison is, he called Roethlisberger reportedly to tell him that the reporter twisted up his words. And I don't believe that for a minute. I think somebody just told him, like, yo, you can't piss off the starting quarterback. He's bigger than the team. Like, so
What do y'all
probably
think about
that? He probably got a little sister he don't want Roethlisberger around.
Before I read the Goodell comments, y'all got any comments on him going at his own teammates?
Yo.
Go ahead, man.
It's just crazy. Like I think, you know, I guess they know who he is and how he is, so they're probably not surprised that he said it. But just the fact that he took it out to Men's Journal and put it all out there like that just creates the controversy. That's just unnecessary to me. I think my man is bipolar, but I don't know. I think he suffers from bipolar disorder, straight up.
Yeah. He also mentioned the Patriots cheating in 2004. But go ahead, Jim.
Yo, all I'm saying is briefly that between his picture, the picture they put out there, and the picture of Pac-Man Jones, I was laughing all week. Between them two pictures, all that means is they need to end this lockout real soon. That's all I'm saying.
Because of mugshots and because he had the picture with two guns. And all the
people
that we're talking about, everybody, they're on our Facebook page. So just go look at our pictures that we post on our wall, and you'll see most of the pictures that we're referring to.
He looking like the Punisher on that joint. And
yeah.
In our chat
room. If they don't end this lockout quick, it's going to be a lot of athletic, rich African-Americans behind bars.
Yo, in our chat room, Naran says that last year Ray ran Troy over, and he said he put the YouTube clip on our page if we want to see it. He said Ray Rice ran over Troy, so we'll take a look at that on Facebook.com/WarRoomSports. But go ahead.
Okay, this is what he said about Roger Goodell. I mean, he used all kinds of words with dude. He called him the devil, a puppet, a dictator, stupid, called him the anti-gay slur that everybody hates so much. He said about the commissioner, if that man was on fire and I had the piss to put him out, I wouldn't do it. I hate him and will never respect him. Then when they talked about on him being branded a thug, he said, my rep is James Harrison, mean son of a bitch who loves hitting the hell out of people. But up until last year, there was no word of me being dirty, so Roger Goodell, who's a crook and a puppet, said I was the dirtiest player in the league. And that's when he went on to say, if that man was on fire and I had the piss to put him out, I wouldn't do it. I hate him and would never respect him.
I agree with the boy, man.
See, but this is the thing. I don't think his sentiment is in the wrong place. But I question making these comments public. Now, you know, I'm the biggest advocate for people speaking their minds. But I think that's a whole different situation. If you're in a situation after the game or something and it's natural and somebody asks you a question, say what's on your mind. But this is premeditated because you went to this interview knowing who you were going to air out and what you were going to say. But if your biggest complaint about this man is the money that he takes out of your pockets with fines, why is this the man you want to go and publicly shame and piss off when he probably has the power and the pull to blackball the rest of your career?
Yeah.
Say this stuff afterwards. Say this stuff. This seemed like post-retirement comments, and that's where he should have left them. So,
Some people go through life playing checkers, and some people go through life playing chess. And just because you can say something doesn't mean you should.
You sound like
Diddy. He's playing words with friends. Yo, but it's like, it was premeditated, but I guess the way he thought about it was, hey, he can't do anything to me now because of the lockout, so let me get this off my chest. So I guess that's the way he thought about it, but he didn't think long term. How many times he's going to get fined this year? He's going to get fined this year, like, you know, for stuff that he ain't got no business getting fined for, even though it was already happening.
He's going to get fined for coming to the game too early. Goodell's going to create a new fining. He's going to create a new fining platform just for him. Watch. He's going to be like, all number 92s will have to pay an additional $92,000 a year for that number.
Yo, I definitely feel y'all with him not thinking about what he says. But in an era where everyone is politically correct, I appreciate the fact that he speaks his mind a little bit.
Yeah, they said a lot of players were applauding what he said. Now, this is what the da-na-na was talking about. But none of them said it. And if they wanted to say it, they could have said it, but they knew better. But they applauded him for saying it.
Just wasn't smart, that's all. Just wasn't that smart.
Wasn't.
But, you know, that's what it is.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's not about –
the sentiment to me because, you know, if a dude was taking hundreds of thousands of dollars out of my pockets for things that I think was totally legal, I'd have a problem with the man too. But
yeah.
Don't know if that was the forum or the time to for these comments to come out. But dude,
probably not.
Dude,
yeah, and it's like, I think that, I mean, I think it was stupid to say these things, but to me, the biggest thing was talking about your teammates that way. To me, that was like the worst part about that whole thing, that and the cover itself, because the cover is hilarious. Like, I can't stop laughing. Like, yo, you're a football player. What are you doing?
He looked like he was trying to threaten somebody. That cover was strictly for Mr. Goodell.
Yeah, yeah. Guns blazing.
That cover,
I don't know.
That
I,
cover is hilarious. Between that cover, I'm telling you, and the Pac-Man Jones, yo, it's comedy. All, yo, all week long,
question.
I was crying.
Can they find him, though? Like, can the NFL find him since they're locked out? I mean, they're still under contract.
Yeah, he's
out.
He's Dumbledore, as Jimmy says.
That's a good
he's
question.
Because I don't know, like, does he have the authority to
I
do
think,
it while he's there?
I think, man, I mean, you know, because the NFL is its own entity, its own corporation. I think they can make rules to do whatever they want. I think if they, like all the players who got in trouble or had finable offenses, you know, per se,
mm-hmm.
during the lockout, I think that, it, you know, if they wanted to, you know, there's nothing illegal about it. If they wanted to retroactively fine and punish these cats, I think they could. Now, the problem that I think they might run into is with the players' union. You know, the players'
yeah.
union is going to, you know, scream bloody murder if they try to go back and discipline things that happened while there was no league. So I think they can, but I don't think they will.
They can't. They can't find them during a lockout. And actually, right before the lockout
during.
Started, they – we say they, but they can't
so
find them
when
that
they resume.
Yeah. Nothing, that, nothing that happens while during a lockout.
Is punishable?
No, but they were saying earlier in the lockout that, you know, it's not, like, illegal or anything to retroactively do it. I just – when I say they can't, I just think it's because they're going to piss off the union again, and they just – they would have just come from the table, you know, kissing and hugging and making up. I don't think they want to piss off the other side like that, so I don't think they will. But I wouldn't say that.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You're saying that once they come back, like pretty much retroactively, like, yo, back on June 29th. Now, the thing about that is I've heard argument both ways that they can try that, but like you said, it'll be like the Players Association as well as the attorneys for the players can fight that because.
Yeah, they will.
They will fight it. So we'll see what happens. But
think
mean,
about it. Even though that time was gone, players under contract now, they're. Check isn't going to be, like, prorated. They're going to get their whole check. So they're probably going to look at that right there and say, well, we can retroactively punish people because we're not retroactively taking money out of your check. It just took you a little longer to get paid. I don't know. That's a good question. We should do some research over
All I know is they better end this John soon because it's getting crazy out there, yo.
Evil that we call crime.
Well,
what did I say, though? What did I say, man? When he said that, I'm like, man, more of this crime going to come from your teammates and your frat brothers than from the people working at the – I mean, those
anything,
people aren't
I mean,
actually
NFL
out of a job yet because
like,
it had started. But
if anybody is on Twitter and you follow these NFL players, it's pure comedy. Like, yo, the way they go back and forth with each other, them getting in trouble, saying, like, yo, these cats need something to do. Seriously.
Well, what I want to know is why Kenny Britt is still running from the cops. Yo, he's on the run.
He's running in Jersey somewhere, too.
Because the cops wear Eagles uniforms. He's skating from the cops like they got on Eagles helmets. But, yeah,
yo, and it's for dumb, it's for dumb young boy stuff. Like, yo, oh, man. Go ahead, brother.
Anyway, man, it's time to get out of here, yo. Thanks for joining us once again in the War Room this evening. Shout out to everybody who called in, chatted, Facebooked, and tweeted during the show. We appreciate you all. Tune in next week, same time, same place, for another great episode of The Reason Y'all Wake Up on Thursdays. We'll catch you up on the hottest stories from the week of sports, so check our website and Facebook page during the week for updates. You know, and we'll also send out tweets as well. And we'll let you know what the lineup is for next week. Tune in next Thursday and every Thursday. You never want to miss us. Until next week, fam. We're out of here. And also, catch us on Google Plus.
Now, yo, yo, what up, yo? Time is running out, it's for real, though. Let's connect, politics, ditto. We can trade places, lifted in the staircase. Word up, peace incarcerated. Start unrelated style, attract millions. Fans, they understand my plan. Who's the kid up in the green land? Me and the RZA connect. Blow a fuse, you lose. Half-ass fools get demolished and bruised. Fake me frontin'. Hourglass heads, niggas be wanting. Shutting down your slot time for pumping. Poisonous thing with stumps, and act chunks. Raise a heavy generator. But yo, guess who's the black trunk? Dough be flowing by the hours. Woo, we got the collars, scholars. Word like peace to power in my whole unit. Word up, quick to set it, don't wet it. Real niggas lick shots, peace, Connecticut. Now yo, yo, what up, yo? Time is running out, it's for real, though. Let's connect, politics, ditto. We can trade places, get lifted in the staircases. Word up, peace, incarcerated, star faces. Chef will shine like marble, rhyme remarkable. Real niggas raise up, spend your money, argue. But this time it's for the uninvited. Go ahead and rhyme to it. Big nigga, Mike's getting fired. Morphine, dicks be burning like chlorine. Niggas recognize I'm here to border more to fall green. But hold up, but what we chasing like grow up. My mom roller, just to death, whips rolled up. You never had no wins, sliding in these dens with them. With Mac-10s and broke friends. You got guns too. What up, son, too? Wanna battle for cash and see who's son, too? I probably wax check, smack rap, niggas, you fat. Niggas, lyrics, you whack, nigga. Can't stand unofficial, wet tissue, blank busted, scud missiles. You rolling like Trump, you get your meat lump. For real, it's just slang rap democracy. Here's the policy, slide off the ring, plus the wallaby. Check the status, soon to see me at Caesar's Palace eating salad. Be meeting Mike's in the keys of Dallas. I move rhymes like retail, make sure shit sell. From where we at to my man sell. From staircase to stage, minimum wage. But soon to get an article and rap page. But all I need is my house, my gat, my act. Bank account fat is going down like that. Important French, but let me speak Italian. Black stallions wowing on Chalet. That means the Allen is statin. And niggas carry gas in. Mad police of Manhattan. Now yo, yo, what up, yo? Time is running out, it's for real though. Let's connect, politics, ditto. We can trade places, get lifted in the staircase. Word up, peace, incarcerated, Scarface. I do this for barbershop niggas in the plaza. Catching asthma, rated sick and gun flashes. Well dressed, skating through the projects. So big ones, broke elevators, turn the lights out. Thick one upstairs, twitch like a chameleon. Hit Brazilians, pass the cash, only your children. Lead a building, niggas, yo, they be folding like envelopes. Under pressure, like Lufa Rigno on cloak. Yo, Africans denying niggas up in yellow cash. Musty like fuck, waving their arms to Arabs. Sit back, cooling like Kalu was on rock. On the crack spots, rubber band wrap. All my knots, few bitches who fuck dreads. On Sudafeds, pussies hurting. They did it for a yard for the feds. Word up, cousin. Nigga, I seen it like a 27-inch Zenith. Believe it. Now, yo, yo, what up, yo?